You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is August 6, 2025. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, of course. And the topic is really comes under the "Why isn't anyone talking about her?" category. Who voted for a Jewish Bolshevik to be president of Mexico? How does a Roman Catholic or nominally Roman Catholic country full of tough guys, macho men, elect a leftist Jewish woman worried about fags and drag queens in a fair election? There are 40,000 Jews in a country of 130 million people. Not just elected, but by a massive landslide last year. Not only that, but dominating the Congress as well as local governments in huge numbers. So it's not just the presidential election. Forbes has her as the fourth most powerful woman in the world, which is a little weird, being president of Mexico. But I've been reading about her since at least 2021. So we're going to talk about her here. We're going to talk about her family. Talk about where she came from and the endless scandals that follow her. She comes from a long line of Jewish Bolshevik and socialist revolutionaries from the old Russian Empire. Again, I have more claim to be a Mexican than she does. She took power in the 2024 election, despite having received 39% of the vote in the first round. Of course, only the first round. But you notice, because there's many parties, though only a few major ones, the vote tallies when she was running for mayor of Mexico City are far lower. There, it was less than 30%. And Tlalpan, it was something like 15%. And yet every one of these elections she won subsequently. That's also strange, as well as the agenda she pushes once in power. When I realized who this candidate was, who they had already said was going to win, and that there was no chance of anyone else winning, not just on election day when they said that, you know, she's a winner by a landslide before the voting ended, but predicting a massive landslide victory, of course, which keeps many voters at home, months before voting day. It is impossible that she'd engage in fraud, or her friends. The press, the media, was 100% behind her. I have searched for negative articles on her in Spanish and English. Nothing. It's almost impossible to get any real analysis. Lou Rockwell was one of the few articles I found getting into her and what she's all about. That's about it. This is Mexico. You know, this is a Bolshevik here. So you have her party, the National Regeneration Movement, or Morena. Majorities in both chambers of Congress and a two-thirds supermajority so she could do whatever she wants. Her predecessor, Obrador, she's his hand-picked successor, very suspicious. Everything is very convenient here. This woman is a climate scientist. She went out to California to get her doctoral degree in, essentially, in global warming. She only had one opponent, equally as absurd. Another feminist woman, Xochitl Galvez. Somehow they get Xochitl out of X-O-C-H-I-T-L. I don't know how they do it. I looked it up how to pronounce it. Xochitl. There was no difference between the two candidates whatsoever. Still, the National Electoral Institute said that Sheinbaum had won 58% of the votes, 30 percentage points over Xochitl Galvez. Very, very interesting. One news outlet, I think it was AFP, who wrote, "This is absolutely a landslide victory, much larger than anyone expected, in fact. And it could be, in fact, the largest percentage of votes that any candidate has in recent history in Mexico ever won, including Obrador himself, an extremely popular president. But it appears Sheinbaum even beat him." I'm not sure if it wasn't expected. They were pushing it for a long time. It doesn't make any political sense to me, and no one's talking about it. Now, the press is absurd when it comes to her, because she's a communist, because she is a Jew, she's a woman. I've actually heard interviewers say things like, ask questions like, you know, tell me how this is a new era for Mexico. How are you able to be both a genius and a politician? I found something else, though. There's an establishment journal, Jacobin, which I've used before, which it and all other regime publications all say she made history as the first female president and first Jewish president. They use some variation of those phrases without exception. The right wing, though, started out this campaign pretty confident in its victory. Not that Xochitl was a right winger. She was not. I came across a court historian named Daniela Gleiser, of course a Jew. She's worried that the post-revolutionary Mexican state promoted an identity based on the idea of a homogenous population, the mixture of Spaniards and natives, the race of bronze, as they call it. Anything else was a foreigner. Well, as far as Mexico goes, I can respect that. This is part of the reason why Sheinbaum used her other name, Prado, whatever it was, which has no relevance here, and continue to talk about her homeland, Mexico. Well, she has no homeland. We know that. So in Jacobin, an article from 2024 written by Noah Mazur, it's just maudlin. It's awful. Claudia Sheinbaum's radical Jewish heritage. It's shocking in how idiotic it is. Essentially, it's the regime's opinion of her roots. Her grandfather is Shane, C-H-O-N-E. I never heard that at all. But of course, it's not a Mexican name. And Solomon Sheinbaum migrated to Mexico. That would have been, you know, Claudia's grandfather and great uncle. They were communists. They were part of the Comintern. They were born in Lithuania. Shane died in 1989. And Solomon Sheinbaum died in 1958. They were part of the revolutionary movement in Russia starting the 1905 movement. So that's at least the context where they grew up. 1913, they sailed for the United States, but they returned to Europe the next year. Then 1914, they moved to Poland. 1920, they went back to Lithuania. It's very strange, but it's not strange when you realize that this is what Jewish revolutionaries were doing. They were moving all over the place, promoting and supporting radical politics, Jewish politics, Marxist politics. They had no issues going to the U.S. or anywhere else. They got into wherever they wanted. So the president of Mexico has something to do with the revolutionary movement that took Russia in 1917. Now, there were Lithuanian Jews, but they were part of the Russian Empire. The Jewish Labor Bund was found in Lithuania, Vilna, in 1897. Not quite as powerful as Odessa or Kiev, but still very powerful. 1920, Shane had joined the Communist Party of Lithuania. Following the Lithuanian-Soviet War that ended in 1919, the Communist Party was outlawed, and he was put in prison for 3 years. A short-lived Lithuanian People's Republic was established, its other members being Jews who changed their names to very Lithuanian ones, including one name that actually was Pranas Proletaris, Yitzhak Weinstein, a few others. From there, they wanted to head back. Once they were out of jail, they went back to the U.S. And they weren't able to, thanks to the awful, evil 1924 immigration law, the Immigration Act of 1924. Well, already the author has forgotten they've gone back and forth many times already. So they landed in Cuba. Let me quote Mazur here, because the more I talk about it, the more absurd it becomes. The brothers joined the newborn Communist Party of Cuba, where Solomon became active in both the party's Jewish section and youth work department, as well as in the National Workers' Confederation of Cuba. Though they were newcomers to the Americas, learning Spanish, they would not have been culturally isolated in their organizations. Jews had a strong presence in the PCC, where four of the party's 13 founding members were Jews. Like other Comintern-affiliated parties, the Cuban party had a Jewish section, as well as a Chinese one, given their large Chinese presence in Cuba. Okay. Meaning that Cubans had very little to do with this. Despite the fact that he didn't know Spanish, he was a Jew. Therefore, when he came and joined the Communist Party of Cuba, he was good, because it was all other Jews anyway. And something called the Workers' Confederation of Cuba, despite them having no connection with workers, knowing any workers, seeing any workers. But these groups have been outlawed. This is under the rule of Gerardo Machado, which is a dictatorship made necessary by Jewish revolutionary violence, not to mention two attempts to assassinate him, Machado. So, of course, in the constant riots and the violence, he bans these parties. Of course, the regime finds this just absolutely outrageous. The first secretary had been deported to Spain. And that's when they created their aliases. Shane went by Arturo Ramirez, while Solomon became Garcia Blanco. You couldn't get it. Arturo Ramirez and Garcia Blanco. Well, eventually they were detained in 1928 as undesirable foreigners. They were sent to Mexico for some reason. And they were dumped in Veracruz. But nothing changed. They joined the Mexican Communist Party. Given that there were close ties between the two parties to begin with, and they were both Jewish anyway, they had no problem moving from one to the other. The Mexican Communist Party was only a decade old at that point. Extremely violent. They harassed, they killed, they assassinated whoever they needed to. But active across the country. Nothing but foreigners. It was not a non-Mexican party. It's like it wasn't a Cuban party. The Mexican party had the Indian activist M.N. Roy, the Japanese journalist Ken Kariyama, the American newspaper editor Bertram Wolf. Anything but a Mexican. So they created the Association of New Revolutionary Emigres from Cuba and something called the International Red Aid. Very quickly, they became members of the Central Committee of the Mexico City branch. Solomon became head of the finance and agitprop sections and the editor of El Soviet, the party newspaper. It's one of these cases in Spanish where you just take the word Soviet and just put an L in front of it and it's become Spanish. Then he says something hilarious. Shane and Solomon's arrival in Mexico coincided with the rise of Mexico's Jewish left. Why are the Jews there? Why is there a Jewish left there, let alone a rise in anything? Even their tiny numbers, they created a communist party financed by the wealthy all over the world. Now, they want to claim that they were barred from entering the United States. That was a lie. They came and went as they pleased all the time. The author says, like, as in Cuba, they brought with them the theories of communism, Bundism, and Pelagianism. That is to say, the Moses Hess idea. Mentor writes, the communist-affiliated sections of this left founded the Radical Worker Center in 1927 to organize, quote, Jewish workers and promote communism. And historian Daniel Cresfield notes that Solomon's work was of so great importance in bringing the PCM and Radical Worker Center together. Jewish workers in Mexico. There was no such thing. There were no proletarians in Mexico, hardly. So as always, the whole thing was based on a lie. They had no connection with anything even remotely connected to a worker. Eventually, they became jewelry merchants. So you could be a communist and a jewelry merchant at the same time. And even if you go to Wikipedia, they'll say this without any sense of irony. But then something terrible happened. Emilio Gil, who was a popular nationalist revolutionary, because of the communist violence in his country, in Mexico, broke off relations with the Soviet Union and arrested the leaders of the PCM. The rioting had paralyzed the capital. Not to mention the fact that they had tried to kill him at his inauguration day. Pascual Ortiz Rubio. So again, more deportations began. Get them out of here. Were they Mexicans? Well, not really. Tina Modotti from Italy and Yuri Roskovsky from Ukraine were sent to jail, which is where they belong. Of course, the author of this says this is an outrage, you know, never giving any context, lying through his teeth about why this happened. Remember, when you read these kind of things, when they don't give you a cause, when they refuse to say why they were put in jail, why they were deported, he's lying. He's covering something up. Shane somehow remained a free man in Mexico City, became a leading figure in the party. He joined the Central Committee. In fact, of the not just Mexico City, but of the National Party, three times in the 1930s. The Party Politburo of the 8th Congress, 1939. And started a family, despite the fact that in the Soviet Union they were banning the family. Now, there was a Mexican president, Lázaro Cárdenas, who was vaguely leftist, but he certainly wasn't a communist, and sought to infiltrate actual labor unions, the Confederation of Mexican Workers. Oh, and of course, Leon Trotsky was in Mexico at the time. And the PCM, so it became the party, the Communist Party of Mexico became very important in Stalin's mind, at least for that reason. Then Mexico did something even worse. They adopted an official policy forbidding immigration by Africans, non-Japanese Asians, Soviet citizens, gypsies, and Jews. God forbid. In fact, Jews, according to him, were the most undesirable of all, which is certainly the case. Well, I guess the rise of the Mexican Jewish left, which sounds like something I would write, If I was going to try to write fiction, it's something I would come up with. Well, very much like Stalin, they created their own purging commission. March of 1940. Remember, Trotsky was axed in November of 1940. Trotsky attacked them. And eventually, the Comintern said that they had to replace their entire leadership. Shane Sheinbaum was kicked out, accused of corruption, opportunism, and you know, probably all true. Now, Solomon had made his way to the USSR, joined the party, and was a link between the Latin American and Soviet movements. Actually, it turns out both were expelled from the party in March of 1936. I guess it was then where Shane went to Jalisco in Mexico and became a jeweler. I don't know how you just become a jeweler. Jews, especially in the Russian Empire, they would say that they were a carpenter or a miner. Of course, they were nothing of the kind. It's amazing how he was so desperate to rejoin the party that he wrote this sniveling confession. Somehow that instead of relying on the working masses, he unconditionally supported Cardenas' policy, upheld the unprincipled policy of unity at any cost, took full responsibility of this nonsense in a world that they themselves have created. And yet Shane Sheinbaum was readmitted. However, in the USSR, it may have been a different story. The Zionists were taking over by 1930. The communists and the Bundists, well, the claim is that they fought bitterly throughout the 40s. I don't agree. I think that's a show. These guys try to claim that the fact that Claudia Sheinbaum appears to be neutral on Zionism may come from this, but this is very uncertain. She hasn't said much on the topic. Other governments through the 50s, etc., in Mexico, Miguel Alemán and Adolfo Cortines were purged from the labor unions. It all certainly makes sense. You know, I wrote my book on the military dictators of Latin America for a reason. Because for some reason, in Spanish-speaking countries, the left has so completely, has such a stranglehold over the information, over the ideology, over the argument, that there is nothing, it's extremely hard to find anything on their opponents. And the church was no help, especially after the late 60s. Sheinbaum mercifully died in Mexico City in 1989, but the party was really dissolved in 1981, and it became the Party of the Democratic Revolution, the PRD, in 1987. His granddaughter, Claudia, the current president of Mexico, is married to one of the PRD's founders, and that's where Claudia comes into all of this. With a family history like this, you know, like Marxism itself, it was entirely financed by banks and the wealthy in the West, itself proof of the falsity of its ideology. So that's where she comes from. So it's very easy to believe the accusations of the Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, that Claudia Sheinbaum was a member of MS-19, the communist guerrilla organization. He said that they already have two presidents in Latin America. They don't need a third. Being a former member himself, who had, of course, reformed, he knows for a fact that she was a member of that group. And he made these comments at a place called the National Autonomous University of Mexico, which had been taken over by Jews at some point throughout this period of time. And this is really where, at least for undergraduate stuff, Sheinbaum came from. On the climate nonsense. That's where the Colombian president said that this president-elect was a part of the Colombian guerrilla organization. The April 19 movement became MS-19. And it was a guerrilla group that emerged after the irregularities of the 1970 elections that pointed to fraud committed by the ruling party, the Borrego election. So this was, you know, it wasn't real fraud, they just said it was. But that's where the armed movement got its justification, and it lasted allegedly until 1994. have the feeling that her contacts, either there or subsequent groups, helped her get to the presidency in 2024. Now to the present day. 2024. No one talked about this. Mexico has two female candidates, neither representing Mexico in the slightest. Of course, Claudia herself, who, by the way, at one point, really until 2021, she ran on a vaguely conservative platform until she got the support that she needed from the regime and then went to the hard left, meaning that she was lying before. She has no problem using these Machiavellian tactics. And of course, as I mentioned before, Xochitl Galvez, another feminist. Xochitl apparently is a woman's name. She was trained by the World Economic Forum. In fact, they both were. They both came out of that leadership forum. And at least Xochitl's background details have been scrubbed from most sources online. So these guys, these women came out of nowhere, really. They were barely holding on to what they had. The simple argument is, Mexico, 80-90% Catholic, what are the odds of either of these bizarre, socially liberal, and one's a Jew, females, having garnered this level of power, votes of the people, it's zero. Probably don't have to tell you that the fact that she is a woman has no meaning over anything. Being the first woman anything is irrelevancy. It's just a distraction. And it would seem that their job is to turn Mexico, whoever would win, didn't really matter, to turn Mexico into a banana republic. Used for its resources like oil and whatever it can grow. So it didn't make any difference who won. They were supported by the Mexicali gangs. There's some strong evidence for this. Planned Parenthood is connected with them. In other words, their agendas have no foundation amongst normal Mexicans. These are jet setters. These are millionaires. They have no connection at all with Mexico. Now, it just so happens when Sheinbaum with Mayor of Mexico City, remember, she got something like, what did I say, 15% of the vote in the first round. Then the media went into full tilt. Foreign money, Jewish money came in from all over the place. 90% Catholic city. Well, Open Society Foundation has an office there. That's when she moved to California in 90 to pursue her master's and doctorate at Berkeley. And then she shifted gears again and went to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change at the UN in New York. It's amazing how this is not the first time you see how these people go from elitist job to elitist job without a problem. You know, she didn't send a resume to these people. 2015, she was Secretary of the Environment. And because of that, and very little else, nominated to run as mayor of Mexico City. 15% of the vote in the first round. So cheat the same way. She was the mayor of Mexico City before her. She wears the World Economic Forum Davos stuff like a talisman. She was invited by Brazil's President Lula to participate at the Globalization Summit in Davos. And her job was to impose the Great Reset on Mexico. But we're supposed to believe that these two women were the only electable candidates in all of Mexico. This is Davos and BlackRock taking over. These women have no international experience. They have no political experience. But who would be guiding them? Someone has to be guiding them. And really, it's Alex Soros. Now, the party nominations were loaded with corruption and irregularity. That shouldn't surprise anybody. But when you get ₱1 billion sent from these organizations, it people shut up. The purpose is to make Mexico a failed state, if it isn't one already. They exist because of millions of dollars and pesos and NGO financing. At the time of the election last year, there were over 200 of these liberal NGOs operating in Mexico, all of them supported by the same American corporate foundations. Even Obrador himself was worried about this. Despite that, it benefited his protege. The NGO called Article 19, that's the name of the group, based in Britain and Wales. It's financed by the Open Society Foundation, Ford, USAID, NED, the Netherlands, and strangely, the German embassy in Bangladesh. It's funny, but also suggests the money laundering issue. German embassy in Bangladesh. Their whole thing is freedom of expression. Except anything they deem as false news. Same thing goes for Mexicans Against Corruption and Impunity, MCCI. Funded by the exact same group of people. Their whole purpose was to install Sheinbaum as president. And the U.S. was heavily involved in this. The U.S. has always thought it has the right to interfere with Latin American affairs, especially in Mexico, and did so heavily in 2024. Now, technically, under Mexican law, foreign governments can't make donations to a political group on the grounds that it undermines the country's sovereignty. As far as that goes, it's okay. Obrador, even though the previous president, even though it benefited him to some extent, he hated the idea that people like Sheinbaum were financed entirely by these foreign organizations. At a minimum, he didn't like how it looked. The Open Government Partnership was launched in 2011. Their summit was in 2015. And there was a coup, essentially, from them that imposed Xochitl to be a surprise winner of the Mexico City mayor's race. She was financed by UN Open Society, a group called Omnidar Network, Hewlett Foundation, and the British government. And the purpose, of course, is the full implementation of the sustainable goals set forth in WEF via the Open Government Partnership. The entire thing is a scam, but none of this stuff could ever be elected normally. So it had to be financed entirely from outside. As I said, Sheinbaum was a pre-selected winner. I started reading about her in 2021. I'm not sure why you would vote there at all. And turnout was low. By the way, Claudia's husband went to jail for electoral fraud. Her entire platform was abortion and the fans in Mexico. Despite being a millionaire somehow, she pressured the university to give her daughter a free ride. Now, something else has to be discussed. During this particular campaign, 23-24, throughout 2024, violence against candidates and office holders was through the roof. It's normal to Mexico to have them facing threats, abductions, assaults, assassinations, especially at the local level, but sometimes at the federal level too. Now, during the 2021 elections, 102 politicians were killed. That would include 36 who were nominees or candidates for public office. By January of 2024, before the campaigning really started, dozens of aspiring candidates opposed to her had been murdered. Mexican government provided security guards to about 560 candidates and election officials, and they deployed 27,000 soldiers in the army, the National Guard, to ensure and secure the electoral process, which they clearly didn't do. Breitbart mentions, Breitbart didn't have much to say about her. But they did have something to say about the violence, how normal this all is there. But it was, this was increased for Sheinbaum. Local consulting agency Integralia says that the official number of those killed is much lower than the real one. That 34 major candidates were murdered before the election took place. Then The grand total was 231. If the factor in officials or former officials, politicians, former politicians, family members or collateral victims. So she's a Hillary Clinton. These people were whacked, whether or not they were, many of them were opponents. That means when the voting came around, it was done under a tremendous threat of fear, tremendous threat of violence and murder. That changes everything, of course. It's hilarious. Sheinbaum claims, she said this in the foreword, that her Jewish identity is, quote, not something she thinks about. Of course, she's lying, because so many of her appointment, her alliance with David Kabash, the Jewish real estate tycoon who founded Grupo Danhos, is another major ally and financier of her campaign. And some of you may have heard that during the campaign, I shouldn't say this. Actually, before, as mayor of Mexico City, Sheinbaum demolished a church. The cover story was that it was demolished a wall next to a chapel and accidentally demolished most of the chapel. It's a lie, too. The parish priest said that he wasn't given notification of any demolition. She had that chapel flattened the only thing that makes any sense, it's not an accident, the only thing that makes any sense is that she was trying to gauge the response. That was elected in a landslide? Remember, Sheinbaum comes straight out of the World Economic Forum, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the Advanced Studies Program in Sustainable Development, etc. Colombian president had made that accusation. She was a part of MS-19, but she was a part of the so-called Democrat Revolution. It was a Marxist group that merged with Mexico's Communist Party. But that didn't stop anything. She was touted by all the right players. The Wilson Center, Politico, Bloomberg, Washington Post. Now, the election of Trump, a total disaster for her. As I mentioned, Obrador hated the idea that these NGOs were controlling candidates, including his own. Obrador was more of a populist, not a Marxist. I mentioned the groups, MCCI, Mexicans Against Corruption and Impunity in Article 19, and who financed them, and the millions of dollars that poured into the country is what assured only these two feminist candidates were the only possibilities for president in 2024. I mentioned Article 19 was founded by Aria Nair, one of the same Jewish leftists who founded the Human Rights Watch, also president of the Soros Open Society Institute, 1993 to 2012, who lives in Paris. It's a network. All of these groups, 200, all with millions of dollars coming in from foreign sources. Their whole purpose is to destroy, either literally or figuratively, political candidates or politicians that were unapproved by the regime, or even engaged in a coup altogether, or intervene in elections, so as to install what now is a Jewish communist president. As I say, her whole campaign was faggotry. I mean, her campaign wasn't anything that anyone related to. Her real agenda, though, was to turn Mexico into it's a third world country. It has not made a jump to the first world. But more specifically, turn Mexico into a EV green society of windmills and solar panels. Nothing has been done about the infrastructure. You have massive blackouts for weeks, the putrid water, the dirt roads. That's not an issue. No one voted for these people unless they were either lied to or told to vote for them. The regime's newspapers, at least in English, was saying how wonderful it was that she is a feminist elected in a macho country, which doesn't make much sense, and suggests there is tremendous electoral fraud, because these same macho voters wouldn't vote for her. Mexico's female voters are more Catholic than the men. So who is she appealing to? Who is she talking to? And don't count out the cartels. Remember, Sinaloa, if you've been following my stuff for a long time, you know, is connected to the U.S. The U.S. has been protecting them for years. And turnout was low, as I mentioned. Obrador's election was 63%. In 2024, it was 61%. Now, after her election, the National Action Party, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, the Party of the Democratic Revolution, the Citizens Movement, collectively filed 240 challenges against the presidential election results. Widespread fraud. They had video, they had everything. The PRD, the Party of the Democratic Revolution, was a spearhead for most of these. They asked for millions of ballots to be annulled, citing spending limits, which are, you know, mandated by law. They've been wildly exceeded. Vote buying, voter intimidation, and all kinds of irregularities in vote counting. That may explain the results. They're right. Now, the markets, not that I care much about the markets, they did react very badly. I'm talking about hundreds of candidates, former candidates, being murdered in this last electoral cycle, which is one of the reasons why the opposition wanted a recount, but a very specific kind of recount. Another mayor was assassinated, one of these who were calling for a recount, and the market reacted badly. Now, Xochitl Galvez, despite her being, you know, a leftist weirdo, she wanted the election annulled. Let me quote her. Now, I don't know if she's, you know, converted or what, but she said, this is on Twitter, she said, "I know the results surprise us, and we need to analyze what happened. We all knew we were facing an unequal competition against the entire state apparatus dedicated to it favoring its candidate. We all noticed how much organized crime was present, threatening and even killing dozens of candidates. It doesn't end here. Yes, we'll present the challenge that proves, I am saying, that one thing that we all know. We'll do so because we can't allow another election like this. Today, more than ever, we must defend our democracy and our republic. Checks and balances and separation of powers remain at risk. But when you have a supermajority, which in no way could be naturally voted for, you have no checks and balances." Now the regime tries to dismiss the organized crime, the cartel part of this. But even mainstream CBS said, mayor of a town in western Mexico was killed barely 24 hours after Sheinbaum was elected the Latin American country's first woman president. And his bodyguard was also killed. The Michoacán state government condemned the murder of the municipal mayor of Cotilla, Yolanda Figueroa. The regional interior ministry said in a post on social media. She was shot 19 times outside of a gym by gunmen inside of a white truck that opened fire. Escaped with no problem. But there's supposed to be 27,000 soldiers, National Guard members, reinforcing election security, and yet this all happened. The violence was worse than ever. The markets reacted very badly. And the election of Trump was the worst thing that possibly could have happened. As I said, the Sinaloa cartel is Mexico's most dominant and also directly backed by the U.S. Their ports of entry are Arizona, Laredo, Tijuana. But as I've mentioned before, their source point is the Philippines. So why the Duterte issue was so important, President Duterte, who's now in the dock, their center is Mexico City. $6 billion in aid was distributed to the CIA, which leveraged the Sinaloa gang and assisted in expediting the drugs, including fentanyl. And it shouldn't surprise anybody that in the weeks after the election, several very high-profile members of the ruling party, the Morena, while talking about austerity, which they're going to impose on the country, have been found vacationing in luxury accommodations across Europe and Asia. Ricardo Montreal. I was the coordinator of Morena deputies in the Chamber of Deputies. It's at the Hotel Rosewood Villa in Madrid. Very, very expensive. 5-star. Mario Delgado, Secretary of Public Education, was spotted at the Posada de Lisboa, one of Lisbon's most exclusive hotels there in Portugal. Same thing. Very expensive. Enrique Navarro, the youngest deputy in Mexican history, had a very embarrassing film of him dancing at Leo, a high-end nightclub of Ibiza, the Marina Ibiza complex, VIP, got the VIP package and everything, 2,000 euros a night at an absolute minimum. Andy Beltran, the son of the former president, Obrador, Marina's secretary of organization, was dining at the Hotel Okura in Tokyo, 5-star property. Very expensive. 50,000 pesos per night. Accompanied by all of these congressmen. It's the same place that Jeff Bezos goes to. He was filmed enjoying a 2,000 euro champagne and fresh lobster. Now, the left has always done this. They've always talked about austerity, something they're into and they're going to do. We have to suffer together, but of course, they live in luxury. We see it in Ukraine. We see it everywhere. The party's ethos is meant to be humility and fiscal restraint. If it ever had tremendous support, it destroyed that. Now they claim this is all privately funded, but it's really not the point. And it gets worse when you talk about the cartels. Now, on April 21st, it was a Sunday, when she was a candidate, Sheinbaum was stopped by a hooded man at a checkpoint during her campaign tour in the southern state of Chiapas. It was clear that they were part of the Sinaloa cartel because they had the images, of the Ismael Almeo Zambada. You know, tattoos and patches and stuff like that. And it was recorded. Said, if you're elected, it's exactly what they said to her. You just want to tell you to remember the mountains and the poor people when you're in power. We're not against your government. Keep that in mind. We're not against you. You don't want Morenita to be another disaster. We want you and your president. Do us the favor of cleaning the section because we cannot travel there. Malapa, mountains. We pass through that section, they tear us into little pieces, talking about the government. The whole time she stayed in the vehicle, nodding, making eye contact. And of course the questions immediately came out. She knew these people. And how did they have access to only one of two presidential candidates that quickly, without any reaction from security? So it's very clear. And they wanted us to know that they were from Sinaloa, given the patches and the tattoos and everything else. The mayoral candidate, campaign rally, whose gunman came up to the rostrum and shot him in the back of the head, point-blank range. Alfredo Cabrera was gunned down in front of hundreds of supporters in Guerrero. Gunman fired off, emptied his magazine. Nothing was ever done. Now it's interesting, these are local government officials. They were mostly mayor, town council. Of course, they're easier to assassinate, although they're supposed to be surrounded by troops. But more importantly, it's the small towns and the mountain passes. As I mentioned, Sinaloa mentioned Malapa. That's where the drugs are going, not to mention their own slaves. Now, I didn't see her inauguration, but after reading the comments of the Archbishop Vigano, I went to YouTube and I saw it. And it contained, what do you expect? It was a pagan priestess invoking ancient pagan deities. There were many ceremonies, all these various pagan groups. Constitution Plaza. There was a priestess using incense and fruit, their hands raised towards the east, and she says, "We invoke the Nohalis, the deities and other beings and divine spirits that inhabit this place. We ask for life, enlightenment, wisdom for the constitutional president, Claudia Sheinbaum." And the Mexican government was very proud of that because they had an explanation on the website. The Nohalis, they're supposed to be mythical beings, considered spirits or supernatural beings that possess the ability to transform into animals, considered protective spirits and spiritual guides that accompanies the person from birth to death and coexistence. So they weren't trying to hide this. Obviously, it was out in public. Vigano was a critic of the papacy. At the time, Francis was around. He blamed Francis for it, which is correct. But John Paul II did the same thing. John Paul II was blessed by pagan deity. You know, I remember that back in grad school. This is the time of Julian the Apostate. Now, the claim was that they were using these pagan incantations to make the indigenous populations believe they were represented. And, of course, that, like everything else, is a lie. Father Alberto Medel, who was an exorcist and the coordinator of the Theological Committee for the College of Exorcists in the Archdiocese of Mexico, said the following about this. And I knew it ahead of time, but I wanted someone else to be able to say it. He said, "In reality, the indigenous peoples are not what's being represented here. I don't doubt there may be still small groups that worship or venerate these ancient indigenous deities, but the truth is that our people are deeply Catholic. Therefore, their traditions cannot be understood without the Christian faith. What we saw there, the inauguration, gave the impression it was a script some of the indigenous women read that was written by someone else, written by campaign staff. The indigenous clergy don't speak like that. They use the terms that ordinary people don't use. It was written by someone. It was a performance, not an actual, authentic pagan rite. So it was nothing but virtue signaling. It was written by the staff of the candidate herself." But remember, we talked about Netanyahu in Israel trying to destroy the independence of the Supreme Court. Well, it's funny. In January of 2025, Sheinbaum tried to do the same thing. Remember, she has a supermajority at the local level because all her enemies are killed. Local level, state level, and federal level. What she wants to do in order to protect the cartels is to block any investigation by foreign law enforcement agencies without their permission. And anyone who supports something like that, like the DEA, for example, is liable to criminal prosecution. Now, the question of sovereignty is something that I take very seriously, but that's not what's happening here. That was right after the U.S. designated the six big Mexican cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. That changes their status militarily, legally, even rhetorically. Sheinbaum filed these motions, or not really motions, changing the country's constitution that if they're approved by her people who run the legislative branch, would alter or eliminate Article 40 and 19 of Mexico's constitution. Suddenly she becomes a nationalist and says, "We don't negotiate sovereignty here. We can't have the U.S. invading our sovereignty." She said it like 25 times. It's very obvious that she's protecting the cartels. We've spoken about this before in El Salvador and elsewhere. It's exactly what she's doing. Article 40 of the Mexican Constitution. The concept is that Mexico will not accept any interference, intervention, or other foreign act that would damage the nation's sovereignty, integrity, or independence. Well, except to finance her campaign. That's no problem. Of course, the NGOs are still going to stay there. That was right after the Department of State designated them as terrorist organizations. that prohibits then any U.S. citizen, any foreign government, any financial institution from working with or protecting those organizations. So that means prosecutors have a new layer of criminal charges they can use. Changing them, becoming a foreign terrorist organization changes everything. Now, we know in reality, well, they said the same thing about Al-Qaeda, which the U.S. supports. But still, she was frightened enough to say, we can't have the U.S. Going after our cartels. It gets worse. There were elections to the judiciary. There were a lot of people, a lot of judges who said that this election was iffy. And they, believe it or not, were acting with political bias. And the proof for that was that they opposed initiatives from her administration. She's calling this the fourth transformation of Mexico, which is something that really came from the U.S. The nature of the reform is essentially to eliminate the judiciary, which is the only thing she doesn't, that she doesn't control in Mexico, from blocking her initiatives. There's no balance of power anymore if that goes through. There's no more checks and balances. They're also going to control elections by controlling the amount of money that you could spend. Even at the federal and state legislatures, dominated by the Morena Party, have passed amendments to the Constitution that prohibit courts from challenging any of these reforms, any of her agenda. Completely destroying the whole point of the court, in Mexico or anywhere else. So if there is an amendment passed, it grants immunity. No court could talk about it. No law dealing with this can be discussed by the court. The Morena Party says courts shouldn't be able to place themselves above elected bodies. And Obrador himself, years ago, was always angered by the courts blocking his key policies. No one's talking about authoritarianism here. The party has a two-thirds majority in both houses. So the party has pushed through a huge number of constitutional changes. Really without even having, very quickly, without having anyone even read the content of it. The judiciary is the only thing that Morena doesn't control. That creates a one-party state by definition. And one of the ways they're doing this is having judges, including at the Supreme Court, stand for election. But they're also promoting policies where they would control elections. Cartels will get their own candidates elected as judges, especially at the local levels, and have the taxpayers pay for it. So anything that she's doing now you hear about Trump getting, some of his policies struck down or challenged, that can't happen in Mexico. Yeah, the minute these people take power, they become far more totalitarian than anyone else. In fact, many of the judges have tendered their resignations, given the election rule, and has a retroactive effect, cancels legal appeals filed by court employees, feel their rights were violated by the reform to elect judges. This is totally unknown territory, but it is not that dissimilar to what Netanyahu was doing a few years ago. It completely removes the court from public life. To think that there's no connection here between the totalitarian policies of early Soviet Marxism and what she's doing here is nonsense. Of course there is. And no one's talking about it. The articles written about her are so worshipful. The fourth transformation. She's changing the world. The fourth most powerful woman. Fours come up a lot. Fourth most powerful woman in the world. Because she's president of Mexico. According to Forbes. And she's working with the cartels to do it. Again, I'll say the same thing. If there's ever a time for a coup in Mexico, it's now. That's the only thing. Especially the Navy. The Navy and Marine Corps are far more popular than the army. That's I think I've mentioned that in the past, but they're not connected. They haven't had as many scandals with the cartels as the Army has. The Navy and the Marine Corps are far better off to do something like that than the Coast Guard. It's very possible. Watch and see if she's going to try to eliminate the Marine Corps, the naval infantry, in the future, if she hasn't done that already. And it wouldn't matter, because the courts can't say anything about it. Well, if no one else is going to talk about it, I'm going to talk about it. She comes from Russian Bolsheviks, or I'm sorry, Jewish Bolsheviks from Russia, Lithuania, more specifically. Leaders of the Bolshevik movement in Cuba and Mexico. And since so much of their agenda is already in reality, her whole thing was the fags and abortion, and making divorces even easier to get in a Catholic country. And that is what got this massive landslide? No, it didn't. The elections were done under this pale of absolute fear. Her opponents were killed all over the place. And those people who she spoke to in the truck, she knew them. She spoke to them like it was nothing. Her security team didn't do anything about it. They had the not the uniform, but the marks of the Sinaloa, like it was nothing. The only problem now is that this was on film. It doesn't even surprise anybody anymore. If no one else is going to talk about it, I'm going to talk about it. Thank you, everyone, again, for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.